Hello, and welcome to episode 27 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include two-time store champion and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Hey, everyone.
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
The traffic was murder, Brian.
2015 store champion and the best-dressed man in Netrunner, Hollis Echo.
Too many decks on the dance floor.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. So welcome back, Hollis. It's been a while since we've had you on the show. I hope everything's been prosperous. You've won a store championship in that time.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The game has changed for the positive, I think, and I'm enjoying those changes and, you know, just enjoying competing at the highest levels that I can be.
Very good. That's what we like to hear. We're all about competitive play here, in case anybody didn't know by now, 27 weeks in. Today we have a dextravaganza. We have a deck tech sandwich for everybody, and it's going to start with Wilfred E. Horrig's deck tech on his IT department deck. So, Wilfie, what can you tell us about it? What's the concept? How do you play it?
Yeah, so I've been working on this deck for quite a while. As long-time listeners may know, I foreshadowed it on a few of our episodes now. And so this is something I've been working on ever since IT department got printed, actually. And so it's kind of a standard HB Engineering the Future control deck, trying to use nothing special, just ice, money, and agendas, basically, to try and score.
What types of ice, though, Wilfie? Can you talk us through some of the specific decisions you made with your ice? Because that's the most interesting part of the deck for me.
Sure. The ice suite I'm using, I started by using in my first edition, 3 Eli, 3 Victor, 3 Tollbooth, 3 Data Pike, and I found that those were, because I just thought that they were the best ice available in faction, and Tollbooth is basically the best resource advantage ice, or taxing ice, in the game, full stop, and so I thought that that would be the best way to go. But IT department, very specifically, doesn't work that well with Byroids, because they're much worse at protecting the IT department and protecting all your servers in general once you have an IT department active. Usually what you want to do is not boost, or boost minimally until they get to the last ice, to try and tax them as much as possible before you have to use your counters. But Byroids kind of defeat that, because if you boost, they can just click through them, so you kind of lose some of the advantage you get from having IT department counters just sitting there. And of course I'm still playing Eli, because Eli is the best ice in HB and really, really efficient on a central, but I've changed around some of the other ice to be a bit more resilient and fit more towards the strategy. So in concordance with that, I'm playing only Tollbooth as any ice that costs above 5. 5, I think, is the maximum where you can realistically get 2 ice in play and rezzed by turn 2. I think that's really essential if you're playing a control deck, is to make sure to secure your centrals as early as possible. And so, but the big discovery in the deck has been putting Architect in it. And so Architect does a couple things. It makes it really, really, really hard for them to face check, because it just gives such a huge tempo advantage early. It lets you install, say, an asset from the top 5 and then an ice protecting it, or really there are lots of possibilities. All basically, it gives you a free turn when you get it. It can even be that impactful. And so, of course, the runner has to constantly be aware of that, and firing one is puts you so far ahead on turns 1 through 3. And so that's been really good. And with IT department, of course, you can pump it out of range of Mimic, which is the common, most common sentry breaker, even as early as turn 2 or 3 when you don't have that many counters on the IT department. Yeah, the ice is, in general, cheap, so you can play them as early as possible. Taxing, so they can not be gotten through as easily, so you don't bleed points.
Well, you've gone for hard in the runs, haven't you? I mean, it was interesting to me to see you playing Data Pike and Bastion, which have been becoming more and more considered to be inefficient, too inefficient to play. But with the fact that they're hard in the runs, just synergizes so well with IT department that you can't really overlook them, can you?
Well, the other reason for playing Data Pike would be that when you get to the point where you can increase its strength with an IT department so it can't be broken, is that it's still got teeth. It's still bleeding the runner 2 credits, even though it is just going to hit end the run, right?
Yeah, Data Pike and Enigma have 2 main functions. One is that they really punish the runner for face checking early, which means that you can start developing your board much earlier, and you know, start putting economy assets or Jacksons or even IT departments or even agendas, things that you want to get going as soon as possible in a remote, because you don't, the runner's not necessarily going to make you spend your money to raise your ice on the centrals because they're worried about things like Datapike and Architect. The other thing is that in the kind of slow games where they're just trying to run, make you use the department and then jack out, then Datapike and Enigma both cost the runner between 1 and 2 clicks, depending on, you know, some resources, so that they can't just keep on making you spend the counters. So yeah, of course, the deck's namesake is IT Department, and IT Department is a really, really, really powerful card that needs lots of deck building decisions to optimize it. And so what I've done is I've chosen to include lots of high strength taxing ice, so that has the benefit of, one, not being weak to Parasite. The original list had Rototurret, which, while good with IT Department, getting your ice parasited is really bad because it means that they can get into the IT, trash the IT Department. And when you've spent 10 to 15 actions trying to click up your IT Department, getting it trashed at minimal cost to the runner, if they can just parasite your Rototurret mid-run especially, is really detrimental for the corp. And so I've chosen to only include ice with a base strength of 2 or more. I think that's the point at which you can it makes an ice resilient to Parasite because of, say, Clone Chip and Grimoire and stuff like that. And the deck can be played a number of different ways. Like, you don't always have to go for the IT Department every game, especially against runners who might have things like Femme or David. You can just play a regular controlling game, trying to tax their resources, and eventually set up a 3 or 4 ice server that you try and score out of if they're going to do something which makes your IT Department not as high impact. Or you can, if they do have something like David, you can leave the IT Department at 4 or 5 to try and make them use their David, and then once they've trashed the department, they should be low enough that that opens a scoring window. And the way the deck works is you just slowly build your board. So even if your things get trashed, say your cards in hand, your ice, or your assets get trashed, that often opens up a window for you to score your agendas in. So kind of all these things work together, I found, to make the deck good.
In a lot of IT Department deck lists, I think initially I saw a lot of cards like Guard. Are you currently running that in your build? Did you what did your testing find with using Guard, if you've tried that yet?
I'm not playing Guard because I found that bypassing was not, like, the ability to not be bypassed is strong, especially against Inside Job, but because it doesn't work that well against Femme, which is another good card against you, it's just not that impactful. You don't really want to pay 4 for a 2-strength ice of any type, and you've noticed that I want my ice to, even when you don't have IT Department, to tax them on some resource more than Guard gives you. So the ability to not be bypassed isn't that strong because you don't usually try and rush out agendas against Inside Job anyway, so usually you have quite a bit of protection against that. And Sentry Breakers are normally good against it because it isn't that efficient. And the important thing is that if they do run into it with a Sentry Breaker, if you boost it with IT Department, they don't even lose anything. So it's not like they can just bleed your department counters if you're using it as, and just to protect anything, just as a simple end the run. And so I've tried to, if an ice is only going to end the run, I want it to be really efficient so that it taxes them a lot, and Guard doesn't really tax them that much, I think.
How have you dealt with David? I've watched a few of your games where you've sort of built up the department and then a David has come down from a deck that you might not necessarily have expected it from, and you've managed to come back in a number of those games. How have you gone about that?
Well, I remember I played a turn 1 against you, Wilfie, and you just had to pretty much scoop, right? Like,
well, I mean, like, it is a joke, but David is still the best card against this deck, so I think so. Like, I mean, not counting like professional contact or whatever. Like, if you want a card that's good against these kind of decks, especially if your deck is slow, then David is one of the best cards to do it. But I found that the key against David is to just not invest too much in the IT Department. If you invest, say, I've found that the sweet spot is 5 or 6 counters. At 5 or 6 counters, they have to deal with it, otherwise they really can't get into your servers in regular ways, but you haven't lost that much. So that's really just 2 and a bit, 3 turns of clicking. So if they use their David to get into the server, hopefully it still costs them some resources to trash the IT Department or to get through the ice so they don't break with David, then you can just play another IT Department or play an agenda. So it's about using the opportunities to get scoring windows when you lose resources, basically. But I have found that decks that are very slow and do have David, like I played against a Data Folding Andromeda deck, which had David, which it was really hard for me to get through because I couldn't score normally because they had such a huge resource advantage once the game went late, and David meant IT Department, which normally beats the slow resource gain decks by growing exponentially, didn't work as effectively.
Very good. Hollis, recently you've been playing a Stealth Andy list. Now, we here at The Winning Agenda have been sort of shied away from the Stealth list for a while because I think most of us felt like the pieces were a bit too clunky to get together and took a bit long to get your rig developed. I think that's sort of changed as the meta has shifted in recent months. What kind of list is it and how do you run it?
So really the focus with that Stealth Andy deck is to use the Breaker's Corroder Fairy Passport, Refractor, and Switchblade. And it's a 2x of Switchblade, 1x Refractor, 1x Passport. For me, it's 3 Fairy and 2 Corroder, as opposed to 1, which you see a lot more often. When I first initially created the deck spoke with a lot of other really competitive players in the scene about Stealth Andy, the overall consensus seemed to be that it's excellent versus RP, but versus a matchup that's a lot faster, like an HP Fast Advance or NEH. I should say MBN, but it's truthfully NEH, Fast Advance. The primary issue is that you're not finding all the pieces you need because they're so dependent on having the support from the 3x of the cloak that you run. So simply doing something simple like going to 2 Corroder meant that I was going to be able to get past those those ice walls, those walls of static, those Eli's a lot faster. And especially versus Fast Advance decks, it tends to be that the ice suite that they're using isn't as taxing. So you can actually go the route of simply playing your breakers or even your a combination of your central-only breakers and your most efficient breakers without having to go all in on the cloak play. The benefit of playing a deck like Stealth Andy is that when you are actually playing against a deck that's more taxing, like a Replicating Perfection, which for a while has had heavy taxing sentries with 3 and 4 subroutines, a card like Switchblade basically eats through it like it's really like it's candy. I mean, Switchblade loves to go through a Tsurugi for relatively no credits. And when you're actually not spending any true credits, yes, you're making maybe one big run a turn as opposed to multiple runs, but versus those slower decks like that, you don't really have to make consistent runs, 3 and 4 runs a turn. You can kind of sit back, use a card like Katie Jones, or simply just hit off your security testing and gain credits to take advantage of the and control of the entire board state, because they know that you only have one big run to make. They can only make a service so taxing before it's guaranteed that you're going to get in. As far as the event cards that are in the deck, I run your standard good stuff, Andy. You've got your Account Siphon, you've got Legworks, your Special Orders, and your Sure Gambles. To me, the one thing I'm proud of the most out of the deck is their actual resources there. I run 3 Daily Cast, 2 Earthrise Hotel, 2 Ghost Runner, 1 Hades or Utopia Shard, really that's more seasoning, and then 2 John Masanori and 3 Security Testing. The deck is sort of designed to take advantage of the one single run that you do make per turn. So when you make the one good run on the strongest server that you can, you're getting in relatively inexpensively, you're going to be able to draw your free card. Earthrise also is a really, really big addition compared to a lot of any decks I've seen as of late, because it allows you the ability to sort of ramp through your deck. And Andy really is in a great position to see that card early game, because Andy decks have the ability to get such a large credit boost in the beginning of the game. So if your first turn is going to gain you 9 or 13 credits, whatever the number may be, it really is nothing to you to go ahead and play 4 for a card that guarantees you draw 6 cards at that point. Earthrise is used in a lot of other decks like Noise. I've used it in Lila Patel. I've seen it in a few different variants of like Kate decks and things like that. But even I think the advantage of having it in Andy, like I said before, is the fact that you get so many cards in the beginning that could be like a huge economic boost in the early game. It's just phenomenal to place that down early and start that draw engine.
When we first discussed Earthrise Hotel, we thought it'd be really home and Andy or all these kind of decks that can accumulate a lot of credits quickly through cards like Desperado and Security Testing, as you said. So having the ability to then have that latent card draw in order to do something with your credits is really good. You mentioned that you're sort of only making one run per turn in this deck. Are you usually going to be ignoring remote servers on the off chance that you'll be wasting your resources and your run on it being not an agenda? Or are you just going to sort of hammer the central servers or wherever you think they're most likely is going to be an agenda?
In most every case, you know, whenever you play any of these decks, it's hard to necessarily say, you know, you don't run a remote or that you don't run a central. Usually what ends up happening is that the fact that you get into a central server, we'll use R&D as the example, the fact that you get into R&D so efficiently, it makes it very, very difficult for the corp to decide the next you know, action. The question to the corp will have to ask themselves is, do I continue to shore up the defenses on R&D right now? Or, you know, if they're the kind of corp that actually would make a remote, do I need to try to actually build this remote? This is an excellent question and an excellent dilemma for the corp to be in for me, because if the decision one way or the other is to make both of the remote and the central relatively strong as opposed to absolutely strong, that basically means that I can hedge a few bets with cards like my Ghost Runner credits, to make sure that I get into both servers if necessary. Most of the time, I will say that Ghost Runner was used to either A, make sure I hit a remote server and a central at the same time, or do something very, very game-breaking, like a RDI run with, and then immediately after, like a legwork. Or the Ghost Runner credits were used to just steal an NAPD when I couldn't afford it. Which is, I think, one of the biggest advantages. El Alad, the Canadian Nationalist winner, he's been toying around with an Asir deck that doesn't actually use, part of his econ engine is to actually use 3x Ghost Runner, though he doesn't really play a stealth deck. And he primarily uses it because while he was playing his Nasir Madan deck, he happened to notice that, you know, it was the card can be metagamed with, you know, cheap res cards, but what was worse for him is he would hit an NAPD and he would have absolutely no way to steal it. So having a card like Ghost Runner there is sort of gives you that overhead in credits just when you need it, and it's not actually in your credit pool, so it's very difficult for your opponent to steal it and wipe it away from you.
I was just gonna say that I've been playing this deck as of recently. I played in a couple of tournaments in the last week, and one of the reasons I decided to switch to it instead of the old style Data Sucker Andromeda deck that I've been playing had been playing for a while. You know, if you've been following for a while, you might have heard us talk about it a lot. Is because people have realized that the best thing to do against that kind of deck, if you're a slow corp, is to just ice up the three centrals and only make remotes when you can protect them. So because they've realized that security testing is the number one threat, and so having a game plan against those slow corps that doesn't necessarily rely on having to make runs on centrals, I've found to be really good. And so stealth is perfect for that, because drawing cards fuels your economy engine rather than making runs, and so that's been really useful against corps that know to protect all their servers, but most especially their central servers, ASAP. Have you found that to be the case?
What I found is that you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that one. When it comes to corps that actually rely on a remote in order to be able to score and win through. So we're talking more or less decks like, you know, Glacier decks right now. It just feels like they aren't able to tax enough based on, number one, the econ engine available, and two, how efficiently you get through their code gates, as well as the sentries. Switchblade is absurdly good for the cost. Yes, it requires cards in tandem with it for it to work, but I mean, there's only, you know, we can count on one hand how many sentries are above the strength 7. So often, you know, a combination of something like one silencer and one switchblade, one silencer, one cloak is good enough to actually make sure you get through whatever the heaviest sentry they have is. And often with the fairies in the deck, you'll find that you'll be using them when your opponent starts to get cheeky and attempts to double stack sentries. So you can actually sort of bridge that gap between that mid and late game where you don't quite have as many silencers or around a maximum of two cloaks in play. Instead, you can just simply play a fairy in addition to some of the support, and fairy sort of gets through the double sentry, a sentry stack, gives you the key access that you need, and then you can continue building, drawing cards to make sure you get the other combo pieces that make Switchblade work as well as it does.
There was always a point with stealth decks where anything the corp does is so inefficient compared to your ability to get into their servers that once that point is passed, the runner's pretty much guaranteed to win. So it's the ultimate in control strategy in terms of having that inevitability. And what it seems like you've got at the moment with Earthrise Hotel and the other cards that you're talking about earlier, Hollis, is you've been able to bring that forward earlier into the game, that point, so that also having the fairy, as you were talking about, you've got multiple ways that you can deal with the very small number of strategies corps had to try and draw out the game so that you reach that point later, you're forcing that point of inevitability earlier and earlier into the game, and it seems like you've got it to a pretty sweet spot at the moment.
Excellent way to look at it. I mean, whenever I'm playing the runner, whenever I'm playing this deck, the main thing that I'm always concerned about is, you know, am I fast enough? And will I be efficient enough versus, you know, the decks that require me to be? And that was, for a lot of IDs, for a lot of factions, that's something that's very difficult to nail somewhere in the middle. If your deck operates very quickly and can build up very quickly, you often aren't making enough credits to handle a very taxing ID like Replicating Perfection. If your deck is one of the ones that require a lot of resources, gains clicks off cred, or I guess reverse that. If you're using a deck that gains credits off clicks, then late game wise, that deck is going to do absolutely well, but it's absolutely horrible versus a lot of decks that are, you know, fast advanced decks because it takes too long to set up. I will say one change actually that I've personally implemented, because I'm used to playing RP as a, you know, as a faction, or as ID. The one thing I've done in my RP deck now is I know that as odd as it is, Corroder is the most efficient barrier breaker that people are willing to influence in their decks if you're not, that isn't Lady, right? So I've actually started putting in my RP deck, running very, very heavy amounts of barriers. And I mean, we're talking, you know, 3x Eli, 3x Marcus, 2x Wall of Thorns, and a Wall of Static. And I've actually, at this point in my RP deck, using less and less sentries. The pups are still there, but Komai Inu's completely gone. Tsurugi's down to one or two. And part of the reason for that is because the decks that use these odd sorts of resources, like the Kate and the Andy decks that are using cards like Underworld Contacts, things like that, those are becoming less and less common, including that the, I mentioned this before, the Orvoir decks that are smashing my face when I play RP. Those are not used as often as well. So I'm trying to sort of predict the meta in that regard. If everyone's going to be playing these sort of efficient decks like what I have here, a deck that's going to tax more overall with taking advantage of the breakers that aren't the most efficient by comparison, I'd rather build that kind of deck.
That's the only other option you have as the co-op is to go hyper fast, really, isn't it?
Exactly. I do think that there's room to argue that cards like, I mean, this may be a bit off kilter. I do think it's fair to argue that cards like Will-O-The-Wisp become stronger versus decks like this, because they're absolutely going to get in. So the best thing you can do is take that breaker and send it to the bottom of their deck. But the primary issue I have is that, you know, people start to predict things as something becomes more and more popular in the meta. So if you see a scenario where everyone's using Will-O-Wisp, things like that, there's nothing stopping the runner themselves from doing something unique, like making sure there's multiple copies of that breaker
now, or just holding a special order in hand.
Right now, if you have multiples and all everything's out, you just toss them. But if Will-O-Wisp comes into play, you simply hold that and use it when you need it.
We're on the home stretch now, so Jesse, you have this Argus list you've been keeping very, very close to your chest for the last couple of weeks. Do you want to talk to us about it?
Yeah, I've been really trying to make Argus work since it came out.
You keep getting in trouble with the Wayland Consortium for leaking their files, right? So
yeah, I'm on my last warning, so I better be careful what I say here.
You're careful driving home, you know?
I assume it's going to get cut because it's flavorful.
Okay, so, yeah, ever since Order and Chaos came out, I've been feeling pretty confident about... I've been feeling pretty hopeful about getting an Argus security deck working. And in light of what we just talked about there with the Stealth Andy deck, and generally with runner decks being able to become more and more efficient and force slower corps out of the metagame, I pretty much feel that the best place for corps to be at the moment is to try and go as fast as they can. And I know that Liam Shielsey Prasad spoke a few weeks ago about his next design list, which is just trying to absolutely rush agendas out as quickly as possible behind some early game ice using next design's ability. This deck follows a similar train of thought in terms of its speed, but instead of using the ice early that Next Design gets, it's trying to leverage Argus Security's ability, which slows the runner down and taxes them in terms of the amount of runs they're able to make and whether they actually want to steal your agendas, and to try and use very aggressive ice that is completely binary, ends the run early but doesn't do a lot later on once the runner has breakers, to try and protect agendas early and to protect centrals. So this deck plays very differently to a lot of other corp decks. It plays, I guess, quite similarly to Cambridge PE, in that you really only want to defend your centrals against Siphon and other things, other cards like Vamp that are going to deplete your resources. So you don't really mind so much if the runner's making multiple accesses on R&D or HQ, because them stealing multiple small agendas is actually going to be harmful for them as well and set them back and play into your game plan. So you can be installing maybe an ice on HQ to protect against Siphon early, and then an ice on a remote and a card in a remote on your first turn is a pretty typical play. Or even just if you're not expecting Siphon, say if you're playing against a Shaper, you could just go ice on remote, card in remote, and hedge fund or beanstalk to get some money. And then you can try and score out a profiteering early. Now, if you do manage to score out a profiteering early, you can take 15, take 3 bad pub. You don't really care about the bad pub. All you care about is the 15 money, because that puts you so far ahead on the credit race early in the early game. It allows you to land, to threaten to land mid-season replacements. At least it keeps you in the sort of zone where if the runner is spending any credits at all developing the rig to get past your cheap ice, finding their icebreakers, then they're going to put themselves in mid-season range. So you've got two mid-season replacements in there. You've got 3 Scorched Earth and 3 Traffic Accident, maximizing the likelihood that you're going to have those mid damage operations when you need them, and to be able to deliver on that threat. You've got a couple of Snares and a couple of Melanges. Now, Melanges are also really good. You can, on turn 2 or 3, just install 3 remotes. They might be a mix of dedicated response teams, Melanges, Snares, and 3-for-1 agendas. There's a lot of win-wins going on there. If the runner runs a Snare and you've got a dedicated response team and another remote unresed, you can res that dedicated response team after they've passed their last jackout window, and they'll run into the Snare and cop 5 and a tag. If you've got your agendas there and they don't run your agendas, then you've got some really powerful effects in profiteering and false lead. And if they run the Snare, there's obviously the benefit there. So you've got some really, really good bluffs, some really sweet shell games you can use in the remotes, and a lot of win-win situations in terms of whether they do or don't run on those remotes that are undefended.
A lot of similar lists I've seen on the internet which use the Cambridge PE style with lots of 1-point agendas, and with the main strategy be killing the opponent with damage of any sort. Don't play profiteering, and I think that that's probably the most essential card to the strategy, because that validates the Scorched Earth kill. And would you agree there?
Absolutely. Every time I'm looking for an agenda early game to install, I want it to be profiteering, and every time I score a profiteering, I feel like the mid-seasons in my hand suddenly come to life. So yeah, I think it absolutely validates the strategy. It also incidentally validates the strategy of scoring out, because in order to score out these agendas that are 3-for-1s, you need a lot more resources over the course of the game, and profiteering delivers that to you.
Of course, I got to see the deck, a little sneak peek of the deck a little earlier, and I had an opportunity to play a couple of games with this at my local game, League Night. So the one thing I was noticing is that whenever I installed an NAPD contract, the purpose of it was to like basically tax the runner that accessed it, but I was taking the 3 off of profiteering often, or the 15 off of profiteering, and so they were basically able to hit the NAPD with, you know, out actually being taxed for accessing it. Have you encountered the same deal, or is NAPD purely there for that early game tax to get off the midseason?
Yeah, NAPD was there for both the tax on centrals, because often if people do sort of do a Maker's Eye early and they hit an NAPD, not only are they paying for, they're also taking tag or meat damage, and that's a pretty massive swing in your favor if you're trying to validate that midseason's plan. It definitely does conflict with profiteering. There's an anti-synergy going on there. And there were, I've probably, you know, I've played this deck over the last maybe 3 weeks, and I've come to like NAPD in it less and less, because it does invalidate that scoring plan. It means that once you've taken the bad pub from profiteering and maybe scored a hostile, the NAPDs are impossible to score. So I've just redone the deck list, and I've replaced them with geothermal frackings, which, while a little bit weaker for that first purpose that we talked about and that you mentioned, is more powerful in terms of actually threatening to score out, and also feeds into the mid-season's plan.
Excellent. That's about all we have time for this week on The Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so at our email account at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. Or you can check us out on Twitter at Winning Agenda. Until next week, have a safe and happy trip home, guys. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Guys. The Wayland Consortium is obviously the most powerful faction in the game, and so I have to play their decks, and Argus Security appeals to me, because I think flavorfully, it ties in best with what the Whalen Consortium wants to do, and that's very important to me when I'm choosing a deck.
People actually did say that, though.